Welcome to the Bad Apples, episode 009. Today I have a guest on the show. It is Ronald Stewart from Trinity Audio Group. We all love our pro apps. We've got Logic Pro for audio, we got Soundtrack Pro, but there's some really great stuff happening in the Linux world in terms of professional quality audio applications. And I encountered this firsthand recently at the New Media Expo. So I was at the New Media Expo here in LA, and I was surrounded by as much cool gadgetry as you could imagine. Cool new apps for Macintosh, all the latest gadgets from Roland. And as I'm passing by this booth, there is some weird looking device with a very familiar application called Ardour, which is a Linux audio editing program, and I stopped and I asked the guy what it is, and it turns out it's a portable audio workstation that runs Linux called Trinity Audio Group. And the guy who runs that, who's behind that whole project, I managed to get him to take some time out of his busy schedule, being an audio guru and a Linux promoter, to talk with me on the show today. It's Ronald Stewart. Ron, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
So tell me about this Trinity Audio Group. What's the device that you make? What's the name of this actual unit? What do you call it?
Sure, we actually call it a self-titled device, Trinity.
Okay.
And the inspiration really was that I was a Pro Tools instructor and a remixer and a sound engineer since 1989, and I got out of the music business in 98, and I always, as all music guys, we always end up coming back to our first love. And I went into a guitar center, I think it was, in 2005, and I wanted to get back into the biz, and I couldn't really find any equipment that really fit my needs. And one of the biggest needs I wanted is I wanted to be able to not have a laptop, but I wanted to be able to take my studio with me.
Cool. So you decided to build one, or what?
Yeah, the inspiration really came is that I walked into the store and I had money in my pocket and I wanted to get going and I couldn't really give my money away.
Wow.
So I just couldn't find anything that really worked in the application that I wanted. And so what I first did is I went and found a couple of dev boards and basically hacked Linux onto the unit to see if I could even get the program running. See if it was even a possibility. And we lucked out. We actually got the units running and we figured we were onto something. So then we decided to start designing an actual appliance, a real board, and try to get to a finished product, which is obviously taking some time now.
But it's incredible. I mean, the thing is just, I mean, how big is it? It's like, what, like a foot across and like maybe 8 inches back at the most?
Right. No, it's very close to that. It's 11 inches wide by 6 1/4 deep by 2 inches high.
Yeah, but it's got a monitor on it, so you've got your screen where you can manipulate all your audio tracks. So what can your unit do? What does the Trinity do? I know it records, it mixes, what else?
Well, one of the things that we wanted to build it is like similar to these UMPC type, these ultra mobile portable computers that seem to be really getting popular right now. The difference between our unit is a specialized device with an audio interface built in. So if you're familiar with like an inbox or a breakout box,
right,
or a USB audio interface, we went ahead and put that on board. So we actually built that into the board. That was one of the, what we felt was one of the competitive advantages of actually getting low latency and having 24-bit audio right into the device.
Okay.
So basically what you have is you have a breakout box and a computer merged together with a screen and for a small platform that you can take with you. But at the same time, you don't compromise the what you would expect to get out of a studio environment when you take it with you. So we tried to get as much pro-rated or fully featured features on the device without jeopardizing any, really without any performance or giving up anything. And there's a synergy there that you have to ride the fine line.
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of what struck me, though, actually, is how stable the unit was, because I've played around with a lot of different systems, Logic Pro, Soundtrack Pro, lots of different audio software on the Mac, and this thing was going strong through all your demonstrations. At one point, I remember it died, and it was kind of weird, but all that had happened was you had forgotten to plug it in, like 8 hours ago. So it had been running on battery, and you didn't even realize it. So it was almost like you'd planned it, so you just plugged it right back in, started it back up, it came right back on, and you were up and running again. It was like the most fantastic thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah, that was really a blessing. That was actually the first time that happened. We ran the device that whole day for over five hours.
Yeah.
And it finally went down. And I thought that maybe something went kaput, because we put these together maybe 2 days before the trade show, so I didn't have a chance to bench the units inside the device. Usually what you do is you put together the units and then you run them and then you finally put them in an enclosure. And when we did the enclosure, we did it 2 days before the show, and I didn't have a chance to maybe run them for 2 months first. And so when it went down, I thought, oh boy, there we go.
Yeah.
And it was just that I forgot to plug it in the morning.
Yeah, that was so cool.
But it started right from cold.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, it was incredible.
With nothing left in the tank and the battery, it plugged in and
yeah.
It started right up.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of Linux, that I think that there's going to be a learning curve for people who don't know that OS, is that it's very stable, it's ultra stable. And it can really go, it can go the extra mile in where other OSs can't possibly.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is that the Trinity doesn't really, like, in terms of Linux, you don't actually have to know that much about it, because it's really customized from the get-go, right? I mean, it's got all the software on there. You just select what you want to do, and you're pretty much in business. There's no, like, real hacking that the user would need to do if they're not familiar with that.
That was one of the things that I noticed once we hacked Linux on to those first little dev boards, is that it seemed like and I still think that Linux has this bridge to cross, is that it seems like you always need to have a secret handshake into compiling, and
right.
You know, what about the user that doesn't know all those things? I thought one of the things that we wanted to get done right off the bat was really, like you said, customize a device where really if we didn't tell someone that was running Linux, they probably wouldn't know.
Right.
But the truth is, I want to give the credit to Linux, because I think that there's a lot of programmers and there's a lot of people out there that have moved the ball at the field significantly, and we want to honor that. We want to showcase their work, because it's phenomenal. If you really pop the hood and take a look at what the Linux community has done, even since we started working on these 2 years ago, I mean, Linux Pro Audio has moved significantly up the field. Now, are they there yet? No. Are we close? We're a lot closer than we were 2 years ago, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I noticed that you were running Audacity on there as well, which I thought was really cool, because in episode, like, 2 of my podcast series, one of the first apps I wanted to talk about was Audacity, because that's one of those applications that, like, whenever I get a new computer, whether it's a Mac or whether it's Linux, I put Audacity on there. It's like one of those applications that you just have to have on your computer. And there it was on your Trinity doing, like, phenomenal things. How did you get Audacity to do so much? I've never seen it be so, like, intense.
Yeah, that was one of the blessings that we've had, is working with 64 Studio, and they do a lot of this type of customized, downloadable distro, various audio distributions of Linux, and actually I should say multimedia distributions of Linux. And one of the things that, everything we were doing right now is running Jack, is really the feature application to port everything to. We noticed that Audacity didn't have that feature, and so what they did is they went ahead and compiled a special version of Audacity that's floating out there, which really supports Jack. And then they went the extra mile and actually got the Steve Harris plugins, which are really familiar plugins in Linux, to run on there as well, so you don't have to commit your sound files and render your sound files you don't have to render your effects to an audio file, but you can preview them before you actually commit, which is huge for Audacity.
That is huge. I mean, yeah, that's always been kind of a drawback for Audacity, just that you don't get real-time feedback when you're applying an effect. You have to kind of render it out, listen to it. If you don't like it, undo and go back in and, like, change the settings or something.
Audacity is a great workhorse. I actually really enjoy Audacity. When we first did our first press release, we pushed Audacity because one, they were supporting us at the time. You know, they really wanted to see a Linux Audio product and device come out to market. So they were really supportive and gung ho about it. And I thought it was great. I still think to this day that it does what I need. If I'm going to do a remix or a mashup or anything real quick, that I can lay down some tracks and I can just basically sketch, if you will, on a sketch pad, use Audacity to sketch out how I want to lay stuff down, and then I can always import it in to our door or take WAV files out and take it anywhere. The other beautiful thing about Audacity, other than the user base, I think it's over 10 million, is that you can download it for free on all three platforms. So Mac, Linux, and Windows users can all use the same application. So it just seemed a lot more vertical as far as how far it was reaching into the user base.
Yeah, and it's a pretty simple application to use, too.
Yeah, the learning curve is very quick.
Yeah.
It doesn't get too deep in as far as really crazy stuff that some of the DAWs do. And I should mention that the beautiful thing about open source and Linux OS, since it's open architecture, we actually have a whole bunch of different type of user applications and use cases and the applications that really define that user in the device. So we have a beginner type of a user that would use Audacity. We also have a medium user, or a guy that would be familiar with like Ableton Live or any of those types of programs. It's called Q-Tractor.
Oh, cool.
It's a MIDI type, WAV type loop app, and it would be really for like a Fatboy Slim or let's say a Moby would probably really use that application. So that's kind of your mid-range MIDI guy who wants to use WAV files and loops. You've got your beginner for Audacity, and then you've got your advanced user for Ardour, which is really similar to Logic and Pro Tools.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to cover all three types of use cases, depending on where you're at in your production, you know, where you're at on the ladder as far as how deep you can go and how skilled you are. We wanted to make sure that the applications were there for each user. A lot of appliances, you really have to commit to one or the other or commit to someone's software suite and be reliant upon what they're delivering. We wanted to really serve the user base a little bit deeper than that. The nice thing is about Linux is we can put them all on there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's no secret, I think that, I don't know, 30, 40, 50% of podcasts are probably recorded on Audacity. You know, I mean, if you listen to a lot of podcasts, it eventually comes out that, yeah, they're using Audacity. You know, it's like, the stuff is everywhere.
It's been well received when we have Audacity as well on the unit.
Yeah, yeah. So you have Q-Tractor on Trinity as well.
Yes, Q-Tractor is another application that's running on the device that we support.
And so when you first installed it, like, was it just you and a friend creating this device, or how did you get in touch with these people to customize the applications for that device?
Right. You know what? It was a little bit of luck. It was a little bit of timing. I thought it would move a lot quicker because I didn't understand how the development community out there works. And so for anyone who is, you know, thinking about doing something and they need to rely on that development community, I would just really encourage them that if you post a generic email with questions to the dev list, they're really good about answering. I think that all the development communities should really put a tag on each one of their web pages and say, hey, look, we do get back to you. Because I know that I was hesitant about posting stuff initially because I didn't think there was anybody that was really going to respond.
Right.
And so what I found out is that after I really worked the dev boards and I really started talking to the community deeper and explaining them where I was at and what I wanted to do, piece by piece, someone would get involved or recommend me. And then I had the luxury of actually showing up at an install fest for 64 Studio here in Los Angeles. And that's when I got in touch with Daniel for the second time. I didn't know that he actually reached out to me before from England, and I didn't put two and two together. And then we talked, and we decided to start really talking about a user platform that we could support that's stable. It's an actual polished, finished piece of software that would actually go on a polished piece of hardware. That it's one thing to take and compile and basically hack your way through on your current devices. It's a whole another thing to deliver a device with a customizable Linux distro.
Yeah.
And so we started doing that back in February.
Cool. And what Linux flavor is the Trinity based on? What's it running?
Right, it's running, we have two versions, 2.6.21 and 0.22. We just reverted back for some driver stuff that was in a weird release candidate. But it's a Debian-based version of the distro that they've custom built. So it's the right answer would be a Debian build.
Yeah. Wow, cool.
And I love Debian. I just want to thank Debian.
I know. I was going to ask you if you had any special affinity for that or if it just kind of worked out that way. But yeah, I have put Debian on just everything I can get my hands onto, and it always runs just so well.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of disconnect with the other distros. I mean, I've run other ones. I'm not knocking any of them.
Sure.
But we're Debian fans. And it's we're intimate with it, and I just like the platform, and it's very stable, and the packages in the libraries compile in right and work for us. And you know, for someone else, it might be Fedora or other ones. But we really like Debian. There are some other. You saw that we had a Fluxbox running
right
unit. We also have iDesk. So basically, the beautiful thing about Linux is that you can go out there and basically customize each feature and compile it into your own version and really build something wonderful, we believe.
Yeah, well, it seems like it. I mean, from this unit. So is this unit, like, where is this? Is this at the Guitar Center? Is it at the computer store? Where can people find this?
Yeah, that's the big rub right now. So we've got the product finished, and we take it out to the shows. But unfortunately, because there's so many big players in the market that really are driving the business, that we haven't been able to really crack the market as far as getting these things on the UPS truck and into the stores. There's
yeah.
a lot of, that's probably some of my disconnects, and I would probably say a lot of that falls on me from trying to do that. I'm really a marketing guy. That's what I specialize in. I'm not really a software or hardware guy. I'm a give me a finished product and let me push it.
Right.
And that's what I've done, you know, pretty much my whole life. And this time it's a little different because the market, since I got out of the music business in '98, the market, especially the musical instrument market, has shifted. There's some major players, and there's a lot of people, and dealers, and distributors, and distribution channels that have to get involved in order to get your product in the stores. And unfortunately, that brings the price point, it almost doubles the price point of what we see as a psychological barrier. And we want to get it lower. We're at below we're at $9.99 right now.
Yeah.
And you have distribution and the marketing guys and the different distribution channels, and the price gets up in the $1,600 to $2,000 range.
Wow.
And I just, we haven't gotten married to any of those deals because they've just been too expensive. I built this device because I'm thinking about the budget conscious guy who doesn't have a lot of cash and who doesn't want to compromise his setup or his software just because he doesn't have the money. I mean, that's the whole motivation behind Linux. So we're really redefining these hybrid type of devices, and we're really having to go out and forge our own market. So the beautiful thing would be to have actually the community support it, because we are trying to keep the price down, and we aren't really making backdoor deals, and certainly not any deals with the devil, to get our product out there. So right now it's pretty much a 1B or possibly a future beta, like a beta or developers forum or a beta release, maybe a limited beta release, where I can get the bill of materials affordable enough where we can build these here in LA and get them out there. Anything probably less than 1,000 units, really, it's cost prohibitive. If we had 1,000 people who said yes today, we want to get them, then we can deliver 1,000 units. But it gets really expensive if you're making them less than 100 units.
Right.
But we've had, I think we've had probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 really interested people, like qualified people who say, look, I love the device, I love what you're doing, I want to support. And then you've got the whole other side of the business, which is, well, you've got to have the money there to support them, and you've got to have the marketing money and the distribution. So it's a fine line that we're still working on. We're really, I need to really pick up the pace in there and step my game up. But it's also juggling the fine line between what's out there in the market and the companies that are providing products. And really, I don't want to pull the trigger because I really don't want to contribute to the problem. I really think that there's a lot of crappy stuff out there, and people are delivering crap, and they have a lot of money for marketing crap. And we're building a heck of a product with a lot of stuff in it. And we just got to get that bill of materials affordable so we can shock the world. So there's the fine rub or the fine print, if you want.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, to me, it strikes me that I mean, whatever price, like 1,000 or 1,500 or whatever, I mean, given that you've got the computer, you've got the breakout pots, you got the software, and you got the plugins, that's probably, you're still getting away cheaper than what you would get if you went out and got a good like Mac and a Logic Pro and a set of plugins, you know?
Yeah, I think so, but then you get the guys on the gadget websites who write me and say, hey, look, you know, for $1,000 I can go buy a $400 or $500 laptop and a breakout box and some software,
yeah,
and I can still beat your price point,
yeah,
at 1,000. And so, and by the way, and then they asterisk by that as they go, and by the way, the laptop's got a heck of a lot better performance than the CPU performance than your machine. The trade-off is that we've got a heck of a battery life, and we have no heat and no fan. So it's really, we can do a lot more with 500 megahertz in Linux than a gigahertz machine with Windows or something. So
it's really
kind of educating the customer and educating that person. And also, a lot of products that I supported because I wanted to give them my money. I said, you know what, I don't have to give you my money, and I certainly don't want to give that guy my money, but I like what you're doing over there, so I'm gonna support you by purchasing or buying whatever you're selling.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the disconnect that we're having right now, is we can't bang our drum loud enough to really let the world know that they have choices, and they don't have to be locked into a proprietary system, and they don't have to keep buying the software, and they don't have to keep upgrading plugins and drivers, and they don't have to keep having iLocks and things like that for all their system and keeping up with all that stuff.
And they don't have to go to the pirate sites and download the software that they're getting illegally anyway.
Yeah, and they don't have to rely on the crummy freeware stuff that's for Windows boxes. So
right.
We know that we're right. It's just one of those things where just not yet.
Yeah.
And so I think what's really going to happen is Mac's going to come out with their little UMPC. It's going to be let's say it's $1,000 or $1,500. Then you got to go buy Logic, and you got to go buy a firewall audio interface.
Which won't work right out of the box anyway.
Yeah, you're...
Those M-Audio boxes are really, really rough around the edges.
So, yeah, you've got your Mac handheld with the software, let's say Logic running on it, and an audio interface, breakout box, say a FireWire one or something like that, and you're still at $1,500, $2,000, but you've got two items with you. So now you're carrying around... Why not converge all those into one box for $900 and never look back? So we just think that we've got to do a better job of educating the client and telling people about what we're doing and what our vision is, and just hope that between now and that time when we're truly right, that the right people will gravitate towards us and support us, just because we're building something for them. I mean, one of the motivations for going to Linux is that I was an audio engineer. People said, well, Linux, well, I remember in 98 people were saying Linux, and the conversation for years has been, well, Linux is never going to be able to do it with Pro Audio. And I know a lot of studios right now, they might not tell you, but they have a dedicated Linux box at least running Jamming, because it's a heck of a CD mastering tool.
Wow.
So, you know, they might not advertise it, and certainly there's money being thrown around in the industry right now to tell for studios to say, well, yeah, I'm using, you know, XYZ company's product.
Right.
but secretly everyone has a little Linux box running jamming that I know. And these are a lot of studios. So there's a lot of things in play, and we're just trying to balance them. But at the end of the day, we just want to make a heck of a product and free the customer and give them the best thing that we can put out there at the most affordable price.
Yeah, and
we'll let them decide.
Yeah, and the best product is right. I'm a video editor, and I've been using Blender a lot, the open source.
Yeah.
3D modeler, video editor, and everything else under the sun. And I just needed a small feature that I was used to in other nonlinear editors. And so I jumped on the IRC channel for the Blender project. I asked the question if this feature was available. One of the programmers there said no, but I can write a patch for you. And the next morning, like literally in 12 hours, he had emailed me a link to the patch, which I can put into my computer, compile Blender, and I'll have all the new features that I wanted, just like that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it was incredible.
To this day, I still wake up shocked about how fast that we can build stuff and debug stuff and get stuff out.
Yeah.
We can just do it quicker. We're more nimble than almost any. You know, by the time a larger company would check their fax or their email and schedule a meeting, we've already got it fixed.
Yeah, as much as I love Final Cut Pro, you know, I've submitted as many feedbacks and feature requests to Final Cut as you can imagine, you know, and I don't think any of the ones that I've asked have ever made it into a release, but I mean, even if it did, I mean, it would be, what, 2-3 years later, you know, down the line? I mean, it just doesn't happen, you know, for these big
It seems like we see this gravitation every day of these like-minded people that want this without being, basically shackled to the proprietary systems. It's going to come at a certain amount of cost and just a support level where, like I said, where people just say, hey, you know, I really appreciate that you're building something for these. Basically, what we're doing is we're building stuff that shows that Linux Pro Audio can exist in the world in a commercial market, and we're also building stuff for audio engineers who want to take their studio with them and not compromise features.
Well, what about that community aspect, though? I mean, so Ardor, I mean, even if that's a great mixing and mastering and composition and sequencing program, how are people going to learn that? I mean, are there groups that are supporting Ardor? Are there, you know, how are people going to sort of wrap their minds around that particular program?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think that's one of these fine print, you know, asterisk kind of scenarios. Ardor, great, great software, great DAW. Where's the love? Where are these people? Where are these masses? I mean, I think if more people knew that they could get a free Pro Tools or free Logic type software and use it, I think that there would be more people. But the disconnect is that as far as I know, everyone's still an island, that we really haven't rallied the troops. I believe that Ardor is now in a spot probably in the world where it's a good time to excite the user base and excite people to start migrating and start really sharpening each other and encouraging each other to get together and start building some type of community that we can all rely on other than just hackers and development teams. I think that if we could get a nice use base that's reaching out to each other, maybe we can even have these Ardor classes where we teach people the interface.
Oh, yeah.
And I think doing these little Ardor labs, and I would even encourage the Ardor manual being finally published and finished, things like that. It's just not there yet. And I just think more involvement in the world of the people who use these types of products, just letting them know that it exists and it's available for them, would make all the difference.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of artists don't necessarily know that these tools do exist. You know, I mean, it's kind of a struggle to get artists to sit down and learn some of the tools that they need for their craft. And sometimes they just don't even realize that there's a whole side of software, you know, like Ardor and Blender and these really pro applications that exist that they can totally use. It just seems like, yeah, there needs to be a more of a community of Linux artists rather than just the prototypical Linux hacker.
Well, I think that's the nice thing about the OS X version of Ardor that you can put on your Mac, is that you don't have to be a Linux guy. Plus, you have Ubuntu Studio and Synaptic Package Manager. Even the Debian has got Synaptic Package Manager. All of those platforms, you don't need to actually know the secret code or the secret knock to get into the club.
Yeah.
You can just put it on your machine and learn it, and the manual's online. So, I mean, you can really learn. I've learned a lot that way. I'm fortunate in knowing how Pro Tools and Logic work.
Right.
So they're very similar interfaces. But I do think that more, if we had more knowledge out there, it would actually make a significant difference. But I would like to see more people use Ardor. I really think, but for me, there's one feature where they actually, there's one way to do some things, I think, is the strategy. It doesn't need 9 different ways to do one thing.
Right.
So really, that really works well for me, because that was one of the things that always set me back when I'm in long Pro Tools sessions, is that there's all these different ways to do things. And Ardor is real cut and dry and simple, even though it looks, maybe you get sticker shock the first time you view it. And once you sit down on a lot of these apps, after about 15 or 30 minutes, you really get your feet and you can actually start navigating pretty easily through the UI.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you know, you have to expect a little bit of a learning curve for mini software. You're going to have to sit down with it and play with it. But, yeah, I mean, you get the hang of it really, really quickly. And especially if, like you say, if there's a community that starts to build up of artists, I think the knowledge is going to spread. Did you know that that the Trinity unit had made it into the most recent most recent edition of Linux Journal?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, totally. It's on. I don't have it in front of me, but there's about a third of a page about the Trinity.
You gotta be kidding.
No, go to Barnes & Noble and pick up Linux Journal this month's issue. I wish I had it in front of me. I could tell you exactly.
Do they have any real pictures or just our cheesy computer graphic versions of the model?
They had a real picture. It looked like it might have been, I don't know. I don't know where it would have been from. I was going to say maybe from the New Media Expo, but it wasn't, because I remember you had a white table there. They have it on like an oak table or some kind of wood.
Oh, that's my desk. They took a picture from my desk.
Very cool. There
wow.
You go. It's totally.
How long has that version been out?
I believe it just came out. I think it's the October issue. So it's. I think. It's, I don't know. I wish I had it in front of me. It's just. I don't know. It's two guys on the cover, Linux Journal. About a third of the way into the magazine, there's just like this little article on it. It's really, really cool. I was like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, we could really use that type of. I love Linux Journal. I really think that's like our core, you know, basically print mag.
Yeah, they're really good.
One of the things I thought that would be really cool is that if we could get somebody like a Pharrell and maybe rebrand it as the mashup or something, or Pharrell's mashup.
Yeah.
I just think about the 14-year-old guy or the guy in Mobile, Alabama or Decatur, Georgia that is the next really good music producer but can't get his access to the equipment.
Right.
I really think that in the future, that's really going to be the full go with this device, is that it was able to get in people's hands that didn't even know they were the next Tupac, and they didn't need to go into the $400,000 studio or know their friend's cousin's brother to get into the studio to make music. And I think that's really hurting the music industry right now, because you got to select a few people who can get in there and get their stuff known And now with podcasting and accessibility, I think there's going to be a new branch, a new crop of artists in all kinds of genres. I'm excited to see what the future holds.
Yeah, well, me too. What about people who are trying to get involved with for instance, someone who might want to help Trinity out? Is there anything that you guys need right now? And is there a place for people to find out how they can contact you?
Yeah, the website, www.trinityaudiogroup.com. They can always email me. I'm pretty good at staying in touch with all of my user base.
Cool.
I think the biggest thing right now is to call your store or walk into your store in your city and say, hey, where's this device? I want to buy it.
That's a great idea. Take a Leafs journal in and just point
to
it.
Yeah, if everyone's getting rung up at Guitar Center and Sam Ash for this device, then... I mean, I've definitely been in contact with those guys.
Cool.
But they really are driving the market right now, and they really want to control distribution and how you come out and set your price point. And so there's a tug of war right now. And so in the meantime, we can go direct with anyone who's interested. Just give me an email, and we'll set them up with this potential beta program that we're about to start.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks, Ron, for talking to me. It's been great. It sounds like you guys are going to do really well. It's an incredible device. I encourage everyone to go to the TrinityAudioGroup.com website, check it out, have a look at it, and you know, if you're interested, definitely get in touch with Ron. And yeah, ask your local stores for the Trinity. It's a great device.
Thank you.
This has been episode 009 of The Bad Apples. If you need to contact us, you can do so at gort.klatu@gmail.com. That's gort, G-O-R-T, dot klatu, K-L-A-A-T-U, @gmail.com. In the meantime, stop by our website for your free desktop art. This week it's a very cool Trinity Audio Group themed wallpaper. The site is thebadapples.5gbfree.com or thebadapples.info. Tune in next week for more Bad Apples.